It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. He's not lying. We are living that dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday. Oh, man, I got a frog in my throat here on 101.3 The Game.
Where'd that come from?
It's a long week of coaching, my man. These vocal cords.
I'm and you're not done.
No, I'm not. We got a big one tonight. Big, big game tonight at South Burlington. My Lakers on the road. Trying to get it done against a very talented, very well-coached South Burlington team. Got a hands full tonight, but looking forward to that. But first, we're talking sports day here on Sports Saturday. 802-655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. And what we have a lot to talk about. We talk about what we're going to talk about. What aren't we going to talk about today? This has been some week in sports, starting last Sunday with the NFL and going through this week, what's been going on with the baseball playoffs, all the buildups of these big games this weekend, especially tomorrow, the Bills and Patriots tomorrow, Austin. You must be jacked up. I can't tell you. I'm on cloud 35 as a Giant fan that my man Daniel Jones got on the field last week and was the guy that I knew he was. Difference maker.
I'll just sit back and listen as you like. I mean, because are we doing that this segment or what?
Well,
we'll get
to it. But okay, I have to tell you, like, I don't know if I've ever been that like just happy and upbeat and smiling on what I saw
since the Super Bowl in 2012.
Yeah, I mean, I'm that excited. I can't wait to see this kid play again. And as sad as it was to see Barkley go down, as we know, Saquon Barkley had the high ankle sprain. Normally, I'd be like, oh, here we go again. But I don't even care. I don't care who's behind him. I don't care who he's throwing to. This kid is a difference maker. He makes Giant games interesting. I don't know what it translates to wins this year, but the New York Football Giants, folks, are on their way, and it's going to be led by this rookie quarterback. And all you guys out there, all you fans and all you commentators, all you quote-unquote experts out in the world that laughed at Dave Gettleman, mocked what happened with the Giants in the draft, you have to eat crow. A big bowl of it with sugar on top, maybe put some whipped cream on it with a big spoon, and I'm going to make you eat all of it because this kid's a legit guy. He's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league in the next couple years.
Well, I'm a fan of Daniel Jones, but one of our new interns is a big Giants fan, and I sent her a picture of the score when they were down 18.
Yeah.
And I felt pretty silly later.
Yeah, you should. You should.
Yeah.
That didn't age very well.
You got to pick your spots when you gloat. That's the first rule of gloating. Pick your spots.
And it's not about gloating. Like, I'm not gloating about it, but I mean, you talk about a kid, and let's be honest here. Coming out of Duke, he was laughed at. I mean, the draft coverage, they were laughing at the Giants. They were laughing at this kid. I watched Golic's kid on his podcast, they did a flashback on Twitter a couple weeks ago of when the pick was made, the whole panel laughing. All these experts think they know everything, laughing. All the pressure of just that, coming to New York on an organization with the Giants that needs to be turned around, all the pressure that's on this kid, and he comes out, and like Aaron said, they were down 18 at halftime. And to be able to bring that team back without Saquon Barkley on the road against a pretty ferocious defense speaks so much about who he is. If Eli Manning was the quarterback in that game, they would have lost by 45 points.
And to that point, you know who never had a comeback from 18 points or more in their career? Eli Manning.
Well, there's no, well, we know that. It's not his game.
He was 0-42 in those situations.
Yeah, that's right. I did see that stat.
Well, okay.
So there you go.
Okay.
So anyway, so here I was just going to try to open the show with talking about the week of sports and talk about what we're going to talk about, but you got me talking about my guy Daniel Jones. And this is what happens when you can't talk about it for a whole week. It just keeps inside. You just get so excited, Austin.
What would you do if you didn't have this show?
I don't know. I'd be yelling at my wife, but I'd probably be divorced.
Just driving around the neighborhood, screaming out the window.
Just yelling things out. Daniel Jones. I ordered my number 8 jersey because I'm going to a game in November.
You ordered a jersey?
Yeah, I got to have one. Yeah, I have a jersey. It's coming from Amazon. I'm going to the Jets game. I think it's November 10th or 11th, whatever that Sunday is. I'm going to a game, so I'm excited about that. I'm going to have my Daniel Jones jersey for that. I'm excited.
My guy, Alex Abrami, partner in crime at the Free Press, he and his son, dad, and brother are on their way to North Jersey right now for tomorrow's game, the Daniel Jones debut in the Meadowlands.
That is exciting. I can't imagine. There's two stadiums that I'd like to be in this weekend. One, obviously, is MetLife. So I think for the first time in years for a Giant game, it's going to be pretty excitable for where the Giants are, number one, number two, the quarterback. But the second place I'd like to be is in Buffalo.
This is arguably Buffalo's Super Bowl.
For the city. Well, first of all, they're 3-0. This is a legit football team.
This is the game that usually breaks even an okay Buffalo team when the Patriots come to town. And if it doesn't go well, night-night.
Well, I'm just going to say something. I don't know how it's going to go down, but I think this Buffalo Bill team, number one, is legit.
They're good.
They're a playoff team. Yeah. They're a playoff team. But this is going to be the first real challenge for New England. But that stadium, what do they call that stadium? It's not Rich Stadium anymore, right?
Isn't it Ralph Wilson?
Oh, Ralph Wilson Stadium. Have you been there?
No.
I've talked numerous times. I've been to a bunch of professional
stadiums. I've only driven through Buffalo a couple times.
Do yourself a favor, if you can, go to a Buffalo Bills football game sometime. The greatest tailgating you've ever seen in your life. Just watching people there. The Bills Mafia is legit. Everything you see online, everything you see on social media is real. Hide your tables. They jump off vans. They do crazy things. It's the most entertaining place to watch a game. But that fan base loves their Bills. And I just can't imagine if the Bills are successful this weekend there, or it's a competitive game, that place is going to be humping. I mean, I can't imagine how the voltage there is going to be unbelievable.
One of the podcasts I listened to this week was saying how that game is too good. They couldn't really have it at night or even the late game.
Right.
Because that'd just be too much time tailgating for Buffalo. They couldn't pace themselves.
That would be rough. I can tell you, when I've been there and I've done the tailgating with those guys, and there are some professional people there. I'm just saying.
It's a lifestyle.
It is. And I'm telling you, it's nothing like I've ever seen before. And I've been to many Giants games, go to Yankee games, go to Red Sox games. I've been to a bunch of Patriot games, and I've been to a Giant Raiders game, and I've seen Raiders Nation in full. I mean, Raiders Nation is a real deal too.
Oh yeah.
They travel well, but nothing travels. I just shouldn't say nothing travels like Bills fans, because I've been to a Bills Giants game in New York, and there's Bills fans there, but there's nothing like the Bill fan base in Buffalo.
No one circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Attaboy, Chris Berman.
Bills tailgating single-handedly keeps the furniture repair industry alive.
In Buffalo, it does.
All of the furniture they break at those things is insane. The tables getting jumped on and like body slammed WWE style.
What's more impressive, like, people aren't really hurt. I mean, some of these things these guys do are, I mean, first of all, they're not in the greatest of shape.
It's that drunk endurance. People.
You know, it's not like you're looking at these pristine athletes jumping hands on the tables. These are like, you know, guys that are not in the best of shape.
No, it's not the Olympic training center out there.
It is not. Nothing even near. Like, you know, it's funny. Last time I went to a Bills-Patriot game, it was the weekend after Christmas. And when I got to Buffalo Saturday night, it was 83 degrees. And I don't know if you remember this game or not, but it was the next day. The weather changed. Like, it dropped like 60 degrees.
Oh.
And the winds came in. If you remember, and I remember it took the bubble off the Bills practice facility.
I think the kicker.
I think Gostkowski was still the kicker there. And I remember he tried to kick a field goal from like 35 yards, and the ball went up in the air, and the wind held it up there for like 10 seconds, and it moved a couple times and ended up getting shot back at him. That's how crazy that game was. But I was at that game.
I've golfed in conditions like that. Not fun.
No, not fun at all. Unless it's behind you. Then it's really fun.
But like hitting into that sort of wind. No, thank you.
655-6672. Like I said, it's a number to call, or you can join us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the same number, 802-655-6672. Did you have a good week?
I did. Busy week.
Yeah, busy
week.
Full
week.
Yeah. Busy week on the gridiron last night for high school football as well.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah, so what happened last night?
So the Free Press was out in full force at Middlebury for Middlebury versus Essex.
Good picks, by the way, too, on Twitter, I noticed. Very, very nice job.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was a very photogenic game. I went down. I was taking care of the photos, working on a feature story while Alex Abrami was covering the game. The Tigers won 27-9. They weren't great. They weren't bad. They were like somewhere in between. Essex also plays good defense. So containing Middlebury's athletes, they did a pretty good job. But you know, some really spectacular plays, a little sloppy play, some not necessarily crisp stuff. The Tigers, their best player, Tyler Buxton, had 8 carries for 96 yards, you know, ho-hum, broke off a 51-yarder. They had a couple long kick returns. Their quarterback, Tim Gettleman, had a few TDs. So they cruised right along to 5-0. In Bennington, you had one of the other undefeated teams in Division I, Burton. They beat Mount Anthony 62-33.
Whoa.
That's a route in basketball.
Yeah. That's a lot of points. I mean, Mount Anthony scored 33 points. That's a lot of points for a high school
player. I know. Take the over.
Yeah, no
their Burn Burton quarterback, Joey McCoy, listen to this line. 16 to 24, 402 yards. So he had 16 completions for 400 yards.
Oh, my God.
Threw for 7 touchdowns. Had 10 carries for ho-hum, 109 yards. That's a 10.9 yard per carry average. And ran in 2 more scores. His top target, John Morgantini, which I said this week, the Morgantini is probably the favorite cocktail, mock cocktail of any.
Virgin Morgantini.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Gotcha. Yeah.
He had 10 catches, 218 yards, 4 TDs. Ho-hum.
Unbelievable day. What a quarterback that kid is, huh?
He's pretty good. That system in Burton's been cranking out touchdowns for some years now. The other side today, the last undefeated team in Division I, St. Johnsbury, they're going to try and go to 5-0, which would set up a 5-0 versus 5-0 showdown in Manchester next week.
2 points I have to ask you. Number one, have you ever seen a team like Burn Burton come from Division II and immediately make an impact like they have at Division I level?
No.
It's unbelievable.
No, I think it was probably Middlebury was D2. Like they'd been in and out of D1 and D2 for like the first decade of this century or whatever you want to call it. Millennium, century,
whatever it is.
Same thing.
I got it.
They'd been in and out of D2. They came up to D1, made the final the first year they were up, then missed. They reached the semis the next year, then they won the 2 years after that. So they like sort of like that, but not like this. Burn Burton is undoubtedly one of the three best teams in Division I.
And what a story it would be if a team from Division II transfers over to Division I and wins a state championship or competes for that. And you got to say, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when they play St. Johnsbury. My next question for you is, you've seen all these teams. You've seen Middlebury. You've seen St. Jay, and you obviously know a lot about Burn Burton. I'm assuming you've seen them as well.
I haven't gotten to see Burn Burton or St. Jay this year. Alex Abrami has seen he's seen the trio. And we were actually talking about this on the ride back from Middlebury late last night. He doesn't know, it's a coin flip. And the crazy thing is,
in terms of who you think out of these three teams are the best team in the
state. Yeah. Like, and so there's a very real chance we could have two undefeated teams by the end of the season, with St. Jay and BBA. One of those potentially has a chance to go run the table after that. Middlebury has a good chance to run the table. I think their toughest game left is probably going to be Rutland. So you would have, and I think the way the points are going to work out, whoever wins that BBA St. Jay game, they're going to be the number one seed. Middlebury would be the number two, and they would have to play the loser of that St. Jay BBA game.
The St. Jay BBA game, where is that being played?
Manchester.
So, and that's a rough trip for either of those teams. I mean, the kids from St. Jay got to travel all the way down to Manchester. I wonder if Coach Alersio will have them overnight the night before.
I wouldn't put it past them.
I wouldn't either. I mean, I'd want to get down there. I mean, that's a long trip to have a game. But I got to say, based on what you're hearing from this quarterback at Burn Burton, that's going to put a lot of pressure on this coaching staff at St. Jay to be able to contain an athlete like that.
And likewise.
Very true.
I mean, Burn Burton's staff, they're going to have to figure out how to stop Coach Alersio's son, Trey, who has been kind of a revelation to start this year, what he's done filling in for Jake Cady, who graduated. And Cady's one of the handful of, you know, best Vermont high school quarterbacks in the last 2-3 decades. So they really haven't missed a beat. They look really fearsome. I almost want to say that St. Jay's ceiling might be the highest. I think we're seeing a lot out of Burn Burton. And I think Middlebury, they are kind of mercurial, I think is the word I'll go with, like where they sort of like just take the game at their own speed. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. But like they'll just have 3 or 4 plays that they will break for 60, 50, 70, 90 yards. Like they just can do that. And that explosivity makes it not as bad for them. Like when they're going to be like last night, they were a little sloppy. They weren't quite crisp. But when you're that explosive, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so. it's big weeks coming up here for high school football.
And
you got some real legit options. And even, you know, we haven't talked. I mean, Rutland obviously pushed St. Johnsbury, actually had a lead late in that game. So Rutland's a team to keep an eye on as well. A lot of good football coming up. But we do have to talk about our Green City Garage poll question day. Green City Garage, phone number 802-651-9299, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington. 802-651-9299. Check out Green City Garage for any of your car problems. I bring my car there for oil changes, tire rotations, whatever. You got a problem, go see my buddy Chris Wallace over there. He is the best in the business, and it's an environmentally friendly garage. Everything they do takes care of the environment, so it's not only good for the environment, good for your car. Go see Chris Wallace. The Green City Garage poll question today, go to at 101.3 The Game on Twitter. The question is today, do the Buffalo Bills have enough on either side of the ball to beat the Patriots tomorrow in Buffalo? That's a question today, Austin. What do you think?
I'll say yeah. I think they do. They do have enough. If the Patriots don't play well, they can get beat. Like, that's a very real thing that you could not have said every year for the last, you know, since the Patriots became the best team in football.
Yeah, and I will say that the Patriots have a couple things that, you know, look, we've seen the Patriots are, they look like the most explosive team in football, in my opinion. They're very talented. They work hard. They have the most, I think, coaching-wise, he is a savant. We know what Belichick brings, but when you look at this Bills team, they have a ravenous defense that gets after the quarterback. Mm-hmm. They've got cornerbacks that compete, and on the offensive side of the ball, they got young running back in Singletary that can run with you. You got Gore, who's in the back, that's obviously a veteran that gets
a 1,000 years old and somehow, like, still going.
And you need guys like that on a roster like the Bills have. And then you've got guys that can stretch you down the field. And I think Josh Allen is the real deal. Gets outside the pocket. He's tough and he's a winner.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the most potent Bills team that I can remember since the Jim Kelly days. I'm just saying, when you watch them on both sides of the ball, this is a legit football team.
That's a real statement. Yeah.
If both teams play their best football, I think the Pats still win. But every football team makes mistakes during a game. And if the Bills are able to take advantage of the mistakes, especially on the offensive line, if their defensive line can take advantage of mistakes made by the guys who have to fill in on the offensive line this year, and they get to Tom Brady, which is very much a possibility, then they can make it a real game and they could win.
Well, we're going to preview this game at the 11 o'clock segment, but I do want to, is Edelman playing? I don't know. Edelman got hurt last week. Is he out?
We
can look that up at 11, but listen, I mean, with obviously not having AB anymore is a big deal for the Patriots. I think when you look at these wide receiver corps, we know that teams that get after Tom Brady give Tom Brady problems, but we also know that Brady and the Patriots are always ready for big games. Doesn't matter who they are, doesn't matter how hyped they are, the Patriots will be ready. But I'm going to tell you, this is a different animal in Buffalo. Going into the season, I wasn't sure the AFC East had anybody in there that could even compete with the Patriots. This Bills team has got what it takes, and I love what they do from the coaching aspect. These guys believe because of their coach. He's got it going on. Buffalo team can play, Austin.
Yeah, it's tomorrow's not going to be comfortable. I'm bracing for that. Like, unlike the first 3 weeks, that someone might score against us.
Yeah. All right, dude, quick break. Listen to you. That's unbelievable. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the team that I care about. Nobody else seems to, but the New York Giants. Our good friend Patricia Traina talks about all the news with Daniel Jones and what we can expect tomorrow with Big Blue's matchup with Washington. Don't go anywhere.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It is Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. I'm your host, Jeff Paul, Austin Danforth. Good morning, my man. After a long night of covering football in Essex.
It was a late night and an early morning turnaround, that's for sure.
Our boy Aaron Wells getting it done on the board over there. Good to see you too, buddy. Looking good this morning with that 101.3. Actually, that's an old school hat, actually. That's a throwback.
Throwback
hat.
Yeah.
I got to get myself one of those cool hats. But anyway, let me tell you what's really cool. Is the Giants right now are relevant again. I'm fired up about this football team. I can't wait to watch tomorrow.
You can barely fit the grin between your
so
headset.
I'm so excited. Doesn't take much. I have this little head, no hair. You know, it doesn't take a whole lot. But hey, joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers phone line right now here on 101.3 The Game is the host of the Locked On Giants podcast, Patricia Traina. And Patricia, let me say before we say hello together, you have the best podcast on pod. If you're a Giants fan and you want to find the right podcast to listen to every single day to get your update on your team, the Locked On podcast with the Giants is the best one. Patricia, you do a great job.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I listen to it every single morning. It's my favorite show. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Not that I'm trying to brown nose or anything, Austin. You know what I mean? I like to just, you know, give credit where credit is due.
Absolutely.
You know
you're great at that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right, Patricia, listen, last time we talked, there was a lot of expectation with this football team. I think a lot of excitement around this football team. I think it was around the fact that, you know, Saquon Barkley was there. There's been a lot of different moves in terms of moving Odell Beckham Jr. The defense was kind of revamped. New offensive line didn't start real well. Coach Shurmur made the decision to sit Eli Manning, which has got to be a tough one, especially in that organization in New York, and starts the rookie. And boy, did he not disappoint last Sunday in Tampa.
Yeah, it went as well as one could expect. High expectations now have been set for an encore, so we'll see how he does. But yeah, definitely it's given this organization a much needed boost of vitamin B12 or whatever the energy vitamin is, because they played pretty well last week.
What do you think it is about him? Is it the fact that he gets outside the pocket? I mean, I can't remember a rookie quarterback that's ever been in that type of situation. I mean, you picture, they're down 18 points in the second half on the road against them. What I thought was a pretty ferocious defense. I mean, especially their pass rush, they got to him a lot. I mean, that kid showed some moxie being able to bring the team back, not only to bring the team back, but bring down the winning drive third and long to get it done, and then, you know, brings them a victory. That's pretty special for a rookie.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, I've made this comparison before, and I'll just throw it out there. For those of you who are into video games, you know how when you reach a certain level and you just seem to get stuck at that level and you keep trying, and then eventually you level up and it opens up a whole new world of tools or access and different things that you can do in order to advance yourself? That's kind of like what's happened with the Giants offense with Daniel Jones. This is a kid who has better mobility than Eli Manning, who's more athletic, and you know, by putting him in there, what the Giants have been able to do is they've been able to open up a whole new section of their playbook that maybe they couldn't necessarily run with Eli at the helm. Now, that's not necessarily a slam against Eli, because he has what he does well, you know, in his back pocket, but, you know, offenses change, and you have to have, you know, especially against these faster defenses, you need more mobility behind center to extend plays and give yourself a better chance to hit balls down the field.
Do you expect the playbook to be even more expanded now? I thought there were some times in the second half, especially when they got close, that they kind of got a little vanilla with him, up until the final drive. Do you expect to see him outside the pocket a little bit more, a few more wrinkles this week against Washington?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to remember, they're starting him slowly. They've been spoon-feeding him a little bit, you know, and as he's shown, he's been able to digest it. They've been giving him more and more and more. So I think over the next several weeks, right through to the end of the season, you're going to see even more things for him being asked to execute. And the good thing about Daniel is that he is in a way very much like an Eli Manning clone. And by that, I mean he's a studier. He, you know, puts his head down, goes to work. He doesn't, you know, he's not about flash and dash and all that stuff. So in that regard, it's a trait that they like, you know, because it's one that worked for Eli all these years. But, you know, at the same time, Daniel is his own man. He's not, you know, people call him Eli Jr. He's not an Eli Jr. per se. Because he's different as an athlete.
When's the last time you saw a Giant quarterback do what he did, especially in that last drive? I thought it was so telling. Third and long, they have to score to win the game, and he runs 12 yards or whatever it was for the touchdown. It's been since Jeff Hostetler, right? Last time a Giant quarterback was that dynamic with his legs?
I believe so. I believe he'd have to go back to Hostetler because, you know, he was a mobile quarterback as well. But again, you know, I had a guest on the Locked On Giants podcast this week, Mark Schofield. And I asked him, I said, you know, how similar is the offense under Daniel Jones, you know, with Daniel Jones at center, how similar is it to what Pat Shurmur ran in Minnesota that year, that the Minnesota Vikings offense was like a top five offense? And he says, you're starting to see signs of that. And I think that's what they were ultimately looking to do. They just couldn't quite get there between the offensive line issues, between, you know, the quarterback issues and limitations. The problems that they had with no running game until Saquon came along and the receivers and so forth. And now they finally have all the pieces. Of course, they're going to have to go without Saquon for, you know, possibly a couple months, but they have everything in place now to be the type of offense I think Pat Shurmur is looking to be.
Patricia, on the other side of the ball, the defense has been a problem most of the season, but only in the first half. Their numbers in the second half are very strong, and obviously last week held a team that scored every possession in the first half against Tampa. They only scored 3 points in the second half. What's happening with this defense? Is it a switch is being flicked on at halftime, and can they translate their success in the second half to the first half going forward here?
Well, that's certainly the goal. But I think what's happening is, you know, James Betcher, as I see it, and I'll use last week's game as an example. He comes out with a set plan, and sometimes that plan doesn't go quite according to the way they expect it, so they have to adjust it. So, for example, last week against the Bucs, they brought a lot of the safety help to DeAndre Baker, because if you notice, DeAndre Baker barely had his name called. He barely got beat, and that was because he had more of the safety help. And then they left Janoris Jenkins to go one-on-one against Mike Evans, not really giving him safety help. So as a result, he got burnt in the first half. Now, in the second half, they adjusted. They started to give Jenkins some help with, you know, from the safeties, and they were able to contain Evans until that last drive when they kind of went back to what they were doing in the first half, and we all saw what happened. So sometimes it's a matter of, you know, making an adjustment, you know, but certainly, you know, with that said, the players do have to step up, and some of them, you've got a lot of young guys in there, and I think sometimes it takes them a little while before they develop a feel for the flow of the game.
What's most worrisome going forward into the next few weeks here for the Giants? Is it no Saquon? Is it you know, teams being able to compile some tape on Daniel Jones and see what they can do to frustrate him? Is it the defense that, you know, I mean, has given up, you know, four touchdowns or more in each of the first three games?
I would say probably the schedule would be there are some big games coming up, some nice tests for Daniel Jones. You know, you got after Washington this weekend, you got Minnesota, which is a tough team to play. You've got New England, which is going to be a very, very good test for Daniel Jones. So he's got some big tests coming up, and you know, you've got coaching staffs there, you know, not knocking the rest of the coaching staffs that the Giants will face, but in those two teams in particular, you've got coaching staffs there who are pretty good at finding little ways to frustrate opposing teams. So I'm very interested to see how the Giants adjust to that, how Daniel Jones adjusts to that, and what they are able to do after, you know, those next two games.
Patricia, tomorrow's opponent, Washington, is 0-3. They're playing for their coach's life. I read a couple of articles this week, and it sounds like if the Redskins aren't successful this week, Gruden could be out. What do we expect to see from this matchup with Washington?
I hope it's going to be a good one, because, you know, you hate to see sloppy football, but look, Washington's coming in with a couple of former Giants. They have Eric Flowers on the offensive line. He's going to be their starting left guard. Landon Collins is returning. So it just so happens you've got a couple of good matchups there, because Collins is probably going to draw Evan Engram, you know, up the seam and whatnot. And Flowers is going to go against, I believe, B.J. Hill, who is still looking for his first sack of the year. So you've got some good matchups there. But the thing I think you want to watch is, does Washington turn to Dwayne Haskins at some point in the game, especially if they get off to a slow start and Case Keenum struggles, or if, you know, that foot injury flares up and he can't go. That's going to be, I think, the draw there. And, you know, I think that will make that game even more interesting if Haskins gets into the game. Because remember, Haskins is the guy that a lot of Giant fans wanted over Daniel Jones. And here we are. We have an opportunity to potentially see that matchup. You know, the Haskins on the field, not necessarily Haskins versus Jones, but to see Haskins make his NFL debut if, you know, things go according to, you know, the way people want him.
Patricia, thanks so much for the time. And hey, just want to, all of our thoughts and prayers are with you with the rough week, with the passing of your father earlier this week. All of us here in Burlington, Vermont are thinking about you, okay?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, enjoy the game this week, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
All right, sounds
good. All right, Patricia Traina, the host of the Locked On Giants podcast. I'm just saying, I mean, look, who knows what's going to happen down the road here? And the Giants have some problems. I mean, defensively, the linebackers, they've got two starting linebackers, and Tay Davis and Alec Ogletree out this week. Mm-hmm. One's with a hamstring, one's with a concussion. You know, Saquon Barkley is going to be out for an extended amount of time. High ankle sprains can be really, really rough on athletes. So
yeah,
that could be a season ender, but they seem to think it could be a 4 to 8 week situation for them. I don't know what's going to happen, wins and losses, but for the first time in a long time, there's some excitement with the Giants. The future looks bright. It looks like there's some expectation there. Next week, Golden Tate comes off his suspension. That will help the Giants' offense a little bit. The offensive line has been a pretty good thing. And they like Wayne Gallman backing up Saquon Barkley. He was a very successful running back at Clemson when they won a championship. So we'll see where it goes. Are they championship level? No. I mean, who knows? But they think they're a team that can be competitive in the NFC East and a team that can be competitive in the NFC. I mean, let's look at it. Basic. I mean, there's a lot of bad football in the NFL. There's a couple. There's the Patriots and everybody else. You get a hot quarterback that can carry a little while. Who knows what can happen?
Yeah, and the thing, it's hard to overstate what you guys did last week, what Daniel Jones did. I mean, that making up that big, was it 18-point deficit?
Yeah, at halftime, on the
road.
And
doing it without one of the three best running backs in football.
Yeah.
Like, without their team's bona fide star and workhorse.
Yeah, if somebody said to you the Giants came back from 18 points without Saquon Barkley, you'd say, come on, give me a break.
Who are they playing?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, was it against the Dolphins? Okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And again, you know, it's something that gets fans excited, and he just brings a dynamic. I'll tell you, in the NFL now, you got to be able to move. You got to be able to move in the pocket. You got to be able to make plays with your feet. And this kid can do it. And it's just exciting to see the Giants relevant. I was telling some friends that were like, yeah, they still almost blew it. I said, you know what? It would have been really disappointing if they ended up blowing that game. But the fact that they're competitive, can score a lot of points, points them in the right direction. They don't have elite. They don't have big name elite guys on the outside. I mean, Sterling Shepard's a good player, and Evan Engram had had his first big game of his career. But
yeah,
they're not big stars on the outside. I mean, this kid's getting it done. He's very accurate. He's very strong. And he's very smart. He's the whole package. It'll be fun to see if he can take week one success into week two.
What I tweeted out when they made the decision to start Daniel Jones was they might still be bad, but at least now they're interesting enough to watch.
Yeah, there you go.
You
there
don't you go. Know what you're getting
exactly. Yeah. And that's all, and as a fan base, you just want a team to be competitive. You want to go out and watch. And be somebody, you know, you don't want to be in the second quarter and be like, okay, what's on another channel here?
And I as an outsider, I'm more interested to, like, if I'm flicking through the channels, to be like,
yeah,
oh, let's see what they can do. Whereas, like, before, last handful of years, I'm just looking to see if I can get some, like, just peak Manning face.
Yeah.
And like, okay, God. My job here is done. Let's move on to something else.
Time for a break. We do have some Town Fair Tire Texas that have come in. We're going to talk about those when we get back. Don't go anywhere.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. 802-655-6672 if you want to call us today and talk to us. Join our conversations. We love that. 802-655-6672. Absolutely.
Or we're a Big Ten operation here.
You got that right. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. Same number, 802-655-6672. We started the show out talking about some local high school football. We got a text from Frank that said, hey, don't underestimate Rutland. They were up 21-7, and Coach Norman is really great at making adjustments second half, the second time you see somebody. So he's right. Rutland's a good football team, a team that had St. J. beat at home at Rutland, but wasn't able to hang on because St. J. obviously, you know, played a great second half, but it was a back and forth football game. Rutland's a team in there that could actually put a, you know, throw a wrench into this a little
yeah,
bit.
And I think the reason where Alex and I have talked up St. J. is I think we both think St. J. has gotten better since they played Rutland. And so like you think about that, and like their ceiling is we don't quite know where that is. Rutland is going to be in every game. Like they're going to challenge anybody because they have athletes. They have a good defense, and the way that they set up their offense for Coach Norman, mm-hmm. that read option is just so relentlessly hard to deal with at you know, high school and college levels, where it's like you force the defense to make a decision on every play, and the quarterback leaves the ball in the running back's breadbasket for as long as possible, and he'll pull it, or he'll leave it in there when he sees that, you know, it's open, because the whole thing with the read option,
right.
You're making the end decide, and they can also throw the ball. So, like, if it's very easy for a high school football team to have a hard time against that offense.
Yeah, and their offense is a college football setting. I mean, you're talking about St. Johnsbury here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we played St. Johnsbury in soccer a couple weeks ago, and we were up there, and I was watching them practice a little bit. And it's a college style system. I mean, they practice the way colleges do, and that's Rich Alercio's background. So,
yeah.
You know, but Mike Norman is a legend in Rutland, and obviously tons of championships, and he is a master of making the adjustments. It's interesting to see what his team does. That's what makes this football season so intriguing to me, because in the past couple of years, we've been talking about one or two teams. You know, this year we've got three teams that could be undefeated, two teams that could be undefeated.
Right.
One is going to have one loss probably. And then you got a Rutland team out there that has the capability of doing anything. So this could be some playoff for these teams.
Yeah, that top four in D1 is really good. After that, it would take some help for, I think, the rest of the division to sort of spring an upset on any of them. And then you get into Division Two. We're talking about new teams there with Brattleboro going up against probably Bellows Falls, which isn't a new team. But Brad, like, it's for the first time in a long time, Brattleboro is having a good year in football, which I probably have to go back to like 04, 05, somewhere in there, back when, you know, only four teams made the playoffs, so you could have a good year and not make the playoffs. And then Division III, we haven't even talked about Division III.
Yeah, big one last night.
I think the game of the night last night, BFA Fairfax / Lamoille, they're a cooperative outfit. They went down to Springfield, both teams 4-0, and the Bullets, impressive. They got it done. Springfield had made a lot of teams look not very good in D3, and BFA did that to them as well. And it's fun to see what they're like. Sounds like this BFA Fairfax team is looking a lot like the Mike Williams teams of 4, 5, 6 years ago. One of which won the state championship.
So, you know, you're talking about another team that's a co-op. I mean, they got two schools together, correct? It's Lamoille. And from what I understand, they've got kids coming. They got a kid from Stowe that's playing.
They got a couple kids from Stowe, yeah.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, you know, again, and then you start talking about, you know, how fair is that in terms of, you know, you're talking about Division III, you know, Springfield's undefeated team. And, you know, now we've got a situation where Fairfax has joined up. And I'm saying, listen, you want kids to play and you want to be able to put players on the field. So I get why it's happening.
Yeah.
But you can see where a team like BFA, Fairfax, Lamoille now is a very talented group, maybe the number one team in Division III, where fan bases may be like, come on now, you know, and we're not, you know, we're not grabbing players from other parts of the state.
The thing is, the apparatus is there for teams to be able to get kids from elsewhere. Pulteney could get a kid from Long Trail. They could get a kid from West Rutland. They could, I imagine, maybe, you know, pick a smaller school that has a kid that wants to play football. The VPA, I think, very wisely several years ago put up this program in place where I think the number is like up to 20% of your team could come from another school as like, quote, member to member students. And the cooperative thing, I think Mount Abe, Virgins has been a cooperative team for several years. U32 and Harwood have been a cooperative team.
MSJ and Pulteney
were a co-op team. It's been in place. And yes, I could see where, like, you know, if Springfield's like, well, we're just one school, but they might actually, I don't know, we don't get a list of like where all these kids come from. They could have a kid from Black River or Green Mountain or something like that. I know a couple years ago when Bellows Falls was up against BBA and D2, Bellows Falls had a kid from Vermont Academy, because Vermont Academy doesn't have high school football. They had, I'm spacing on his name. He's big, powerful runner. Didn't like, and you could tell he probably wasn't a local kid, but he was a difference maker for them in the backfield, and he helped them get to the championship game.
So the question is, but then the question, does that mean any kid that wants to play football from these schools gets a chance to make play on these teams? Or are we talking about people going out and recruiting like this kid from Vermont Academy that's a big, powerful runner that would really help the team? Are we out recruiting these kids, or is this an opportunity we're opening up? Say, hey, everybody over there, you want to try football? Come on over to us. Is that what's happening?
I think recruiting for one school from another school, that's like too many degrees. You can't do it, but I also don't think that's going to happen because in that instance, like, that kid was clearly going to Vermont Academy for some other reason, and he's a football player, and Vermont Academy's like, well, we can probably set up a member-to-member agreement with whether it was Brattleboro or Bellows Falls or one of those nearby schools.
And in the state of Vermont, the truth be told, it needs this. I mean, football has been, you know, the numbers in football have been going down for years in Vermont in terms of what we've seen in teams. I mean, even when you watch even some of these big time schools and you look at the size of the sidelines, they're small. There's not very many kids in the sidelines anymore, which is crazy because 20 years ago, everybody had tons of athletes.
Everybody had 70 kids.
Yeah. You know, and now you don't see that. Even the big schools, you know, the schools that were perennial powerhouses in football don't have the numbers. So it's something that gets kids out and playing, and it gives programs and schools the opportunity to play. You saw what happened with Rice this year, having to forfeit a game because they didn't have enough healthy athletes to play. That's a sad thing to see from a program like Rice that's been so proud and has had one of the best football programs in the state for a long time.
Yeah. And I mean, they're fighting to have enough kids who are, you know, varsity ready every week now.
And let me ask you this too. I mean, we have seen teams jump around. Like Brattleboro now is Division II. Mm-hmm. Rice was a Division II powerhouse, and now they go to Division I, and it's been a struggle for them. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, you kind of feel like, look, you know, if you're a Division II team, you're a Division II team. But it's hard for me to see a school like Brattleboro that's that size, that because they haven't had a lot of success in the last few years, you know, now we're going to go try to play Division II, and now they're competitive in Division II. I just never understood that mentality. I remember there were years that Burlington High School was Division II in football.
I think, was Division III at one point.
Was that during like their early years when they were starting out?
No.
I mean, how can a school like Burlington or South Burlington not be Division I? And with, with the sheer numbers, I understand we want to win here, and I understand that it's fun to win. And I'm a high school coach. I get it. It's a lot more fun to win games. But, I mean, what are you teaching if, you know, every 3 years, we're going to move because we weren't successful for 3 years and go down and start dominating Division II? Like, that's – what are you training kids to be?
I've lost track of the number of times I've had this conversation with coaches in other sports that are just flabbergasted by, like – most schools in other sports are always going to be whatever division they're in.
Yeah.
Whether you're Burlington, CVU, Spalding, MMU, like they're generally always going to be Division I teams in those core sports. But football, at some point, the football league decided they want it to be sort of formula based, where it's a combination of size and program health and program success.
But program health and success could be you have a great class that comes in and you're successful for 2 years. Then you have your next couple classes, just they're small.
I mean, it happened.
Part of it.
It happened when I was in high school at Fairhaven.
Happens to most people.
The Fairhaven football team, I think, won two straight undefeated championships. They were 9-0, lost in the semis as my junior year, my friends did. And then senior year, they moved us up to D1, got slaughtered.
Well, I mean, Rice. I mean, look at what's happening with Rice. I mean, Rice had that run where they were dominant in Division II. Okay, those kids graduated, but they moved them
Rice
up.
Is a tricky thing because the nature of that school and the way that kids can come there or decide to come there, next year they could have a windfall of kids. They could get three studs. And if you have two or three studs that can stay healthy, you can win a football championship in any division.
Then maybe Rice isn't the example because of that piece.
But Rice could be five kids away.
That's true.
From being a contender in Division I.
But I look at the years that Burlington High School was a Division II football team.
Mm-hmm.
You just said South Burlington was a Division III football team. Brattleboro today is a Division II football
team. Spalding is one of the 10 or 12 biggest schools in the state. And they are Division II. They've flirted with Division III because they've been so bad for so long.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't get. I just don't understand. What are we doing? And how fair is that to the real Division II and III teams that are, because of size, that are perennial powers in those divisions?
It doesn't feel right.
It just doesn't work.
You get BFA Fairfax playing Spalding.
Yeah.
Like a 900-kid school playing a 300-kid school.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like that's where you lose me with this.
Well, there's some logic out there, whether it's logical or not. The theory is like, ultimately, if this program is just suffering and kids don't want to turn out for it already because they're bad, and you just let them keep getting beat up, the program's just going to wither up and die.
But what happens to a program then? What happens to that Division II school that doesn't have the sheer numbers to compete with that Division I school that went to Division II? I mean, what are we trying to do here? That's my point. I mean, to me, it's like, look, you know, if you want to build a program and to build a culture of winning, that's part of the fun. And I think for coaches, you play at CVU. CVU's been up and down. I mean, that's part of building a program. That's part of it. And to see these schools that are, you know, we had 4 or 5 years we were, you know, not very successful in Division I. So these big schools are going to Division II. How fair is that? Like you just mentioned, BFA Fairfax has me having to play Spalding, who's one of the biggest schools in the state. That's just ridiculous to me.
You can look at probably the poster child for building a program right now is going to be Burr & Burton, because they didn't have a program for decades. They rebooted it around 2000. It was 99, 2000, 2001, somewhere in there. They went from Division III to Division II, hadn't had a winning record. And then now they have gone up to Division I after dominating Division II, and they're one of the best teams in Division I. Like it took 20 years, and people don't necessarily have the patience for that. But yeah, I'm not against you. I'm just trying to explain where everything I've heard is why this exists.
The way I see it, it shouldn't not be an option to change divisions, but it should not be the first option. It seems like some of these schools, the moment they start to struggle, they want to switch divisions.
It's not the schools that want to switch. It's ultimately the league that moves them because they haven't been good. And it's like, okay,
and what's going to happen? What happens if Burn this class leaves? This quarterback and these kids leave. What happens next? Are we going to?
They probably will take
struggles. We're going to struggle for a few. We're going right back down to Division II. I mean, you have coaches that are working their rear ends off day in and day out to build a program around not as many kids as you see other schools have. You build your program, you've established it, then you start seeing these teams coming in that triple your size, and you got to compete with them now. Like, I just don't get that. I mean, if you're a Division I size school, you're Division I. You know, get there. Figure out a way to get your program to where it needs to be. Look what Rich Alercio did at St. Jay. When you get to St. Jay, they weren't a powerhouse.
Their last championship was in Division II.
And look what they are now. You put the right guy in the helm and you see what happens. And it's not all about championships anyway. High school sports is about playing on a team, playing with your neighbors, competing together, building together. You know, it shouldn't be about all championships. I mean, everybody wants to win one. Everybody wants to be successful. But this is a lot of people learn about life this way. Mm-hmm. And if the mentality is, hey, you're not good enough to Division One last 4 or 5 years, we're going to have you play smaller schools. What are we teaching kids when we do
that? Yeah, I mean, Brattleboro going down, Mount Anthony going down, North Country's a D2 school. Like, they're... You look at the school size and it doesn't necessarily make sense, but that's just how it is.
When it becomes clear that a school that's Division I size and has been Division I has long, in terms of long term, a Division II program, then I understand it. But a lot of times that's not what happens. It's a Division I program that is playing at Division II level right now because of the way their program has performed lately, and they get moved. And that's they pull the trigger too fast.
Well, I mean, it's for whatever the reasoning is, I just think that when you're building a program, you know, I'll give you a quick example, then we got to take a break, I know, but like my soccer team, you know, we're the smallest school in the metro at Colchester. We don't have the numbers that, say, these other schools do. Whenever we look, it's time for us to re-up our schedule, people like, you want up this, you know, I'm trying to put as many Division I teams on as we can because it's about getting our kids prepared to play and getting them challenged every single day. That's what makes successful people, is making sure we're challenged every single time we step on the field to make us have to be our best every time. That's what builds programs and builds people. If we're training our people, we're telling our kids that, hey, we can't compete against these schools, we're going to have you play lower level. When these kids get to the next level of life, what are they going to do when they're challenged? I mean, really, that's really what it's about to me. So when you see these giant schools, like I'm using Brattleboro shouldn't be Division II. They should be Division I and find a way to build a culture. It may take some time. Look at Burn Burton. They're where they are today because they've taken the time. But, you know, if you're a big school and the numbers are there, you should be Division I and figure out a way to be successful that way. That's how you build people. That's how you have successful people. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Out in Left Field time. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron, what do you got today?
All right, a leaping deer kicks a woman while she's pumping gas. A Georgia woman went to fill up her gas tank before work when a deer leaped over her head, kicking her in the process. Ooh. Linda Tennant told news station she was pumping gas in Brunswick, Georgia on Wednesday when the incident occurred. Tennant said she thought she was being robbed. The animal's hoof hit her when she wasn't looking.
Eek.
She says she stood there for a minute to process what happened. She didn't say whether she suffered any injuries. Despite everything, she told the television station she was still in good spirits. She says the deer ran off.
Well, wrong place, wrong time for that gal, I guess.
First thing, shocked it's not Florida. Second thing,
or Jersey.
I'm looking, great last name, Tennant. That's one of the, it's a great Scottish beer. Had a lot of Tennants when I was in Scotland in May. And yeah, deers have ups. Like I've been driving down my parents' road at night and I see a deer coming through like a pasture, slam on the brakes. The deer jumps and hood slides across my hood.
No kidding.
Yeah. And this is weeks after I actually hit a deer.
Did it survive?
The first one I hit did not. The one that did the hood slide just ran off.
Ran off?
Yeah.
It's like a Dukes of Hazzard deer or something.
It was. It really was.
I was in a car in college that actually clipped a moose. And the moose, which we're so lucky. We were coming back. We were going back to the dorms. It was late at night and you couldn't see it, but she just clipped the front of it and it rolled over the top. And we were like, oh my God, we stopped the car, obviously, and got up, and that moose just got up and walked off into the woods. I mean, I don't know if it was her and it was dark, but I mean, I've seen that. I've never hit a deer. Thank goodness. I knock on wood, I never do, but got to keep your eyes peeled on the interstate.
I've heard of people like going in smaller cars, although you don't have to be that small a car to go under a moose's chin. Like the moose is on the side of the road, like it stopped just in time, and the people like you, if you were in the passenger seat, you'd be looking up at the moose's neck.
You ever seen a moose?
Yeah,
I had a moose in my backyard a couple years ago, and I mean, it was unbelievable watching. It just kind of hung out for a while. Then he started to leave, and my wife Googled moose calls, starts playing the moose calls on the cell phone, and the moose comes charging back. I just put a fence in the backyard. That was going to go through our fence. I'm like, Monica, I don't know what your call is saying to that moose, but let's turn it off.
Your wife's from Maine. She knows.
Yeah, she, that's a very good point. She probably didn't even need the Google. She could have just said it.
I'm actually shocked she didn't know that. Yeah.
It is crazy. My in-laws, they live way up in the woods in Maine. They live just outside Bangor, Maine, and they get up in the morning. They'll be bear like pushing their faces against their windows, and they got all kinds. I've never seen a bear in the wild either. I'd like to see that.
Well, I have an uncle who lives in Cabot, and he has seen some bears. He was once
Cabo?
He was once hunting.
There's
hunting,
no bears in Cabo.
He was once hunting in a apple tree. Like, he was just sitting in the tree, and a bear walked under him, and he just sat there and was like, oh, hey, there's a bear.
See, yeah. That would be a little scary for me.
I've seen bear from a distance in Vermont twice. And one time I was driving to Manchester to caddy during college in the early morning, like probably like 6:30, 6:40, driving on Route 30 in Pollitt, which is just winding along the river. And I'm looking off ahead and it's really flat and open. And I see this, what looks like a giant, like dog.
Maybe a squatch.
No, it wasn't. Oh, okay. It was on four legs. Giant, looked like a giant dog, but like lumbering, like it had like a bad wheel or something. And I was like, oh no, that's a bear.
Wow.
Like, and it was probably like a 200-pound little black bear. Just
never seen one in the wild. Love to see it, as long as it's safe for me. All right, sports update time.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Yeah, I forgot that we have cameras on us today. We're live on Twitch TV. Man, poor you if you're watching us this morning.
Yeah, you know, do we have an idea how many people are watching right now?
I hope nobody.
It's been about five so far today.
Oh, God, I'm glad we haven't got any bad comments. Don't make fun of my head because it makes me self-conscious. Just saying. 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join this conversation. Another text we got earlier is from Bill in Plattsburgh. We had talked earlier about fan bases at other places. He said, talking about teams' fan bases traveling to opponents' fields, I went to a Giants-Cowboys game at MetLife 2 years ago, and it seemed like at least half the fans were Cowboy fans. Being a Dallas fan and sitting around 75% of Dallas fans in New York was pretty cool. I will say, Bill, I think I remember that game. I think the Giants were like 4-something at the time and Dallas wasn't. So I think it probably had something to do with what the team was like. But there's no question the Cowboys fan base travels as well. Last week in Tampa with the Giants, it seemed like every time the Giants made a play, the crowd was going nuts. It seemed like that was MetLife South in Tampa. So the big teams move around. But I will tell you, if you haven't been, and I'll say it again, if you haven't been to a Bills game yet, man, in Buffalo, do yourself a favor and go do that.
And I think you talk about Dallas being quote unquote, or formerly, I'd say formerly America's team. And I'll probably pick a fight with someone over that right now. Yeah. But they're going to have fans stashed all over the country. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's necessarily them traveling a lot. Like, I don't think Dallas is upping stakes and moving to New York.
No. Right,
but
right.
Buffalo, I think Buffalo, like that being a smaller market, when they travel well, they are actually traveling.
And I think when I say about Raiders Nation as well, I mean, the Raiders,
same thing.
But I feel like, they have, I just think all over the country, they have such a huge fan base, you know, just from the 70s, you know,
the Raiders,
you know, I mean, Al Davis's Raiders. I mean, I was at a, I'm telling you, it was 5-6 years ago, Giants Raiders at MetLife. And it was actually, I met a bunch of these, you know, the Raider Nation. They invited me into a couple of their tents. It's insane. I mean, these people, it's crazy. And there's a lot of Giant fans are the same way. But I mean, there were so many Raider fans and they have these like dump trucks that are just decked out and they have these amazing like parties. And it's just, really is amazing. I'm telling you, these people are professional. When I go tailgating, I bring like a few sandwiches and like, you know, something to drink. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing my tailgating compared to some of this other stuff.
I've been to one NFL game. It was a Patriots game 2 years ago, a rare loss at Foxborough.
Whoa.
It's sort of like seeing a unicorn. But maybe it was where we were parked at Foxborough, but like it seemed very laid back. It was a 4 o'clock game. It just seems sort of like a very casual, like they're pacing themselves because they know they're going to have probably 10 home games and it's been 10 home games a year. I don't know if they just don't put as much into it because they know the season is going to be much longer. Well, I don't know what it is, but it was fun. It was laid back. It was perfectly my speed.
I was coming home from Boston during an ice storm, and it was the afternoon before a night Patriots game, and I think for whatever, because they say shut down 93,
ooh,
and all the Patriot fans on the way to the game just pulled their grills. I'm driving, trying to get back to Vermont. They just pulled their grills out in 93. They're just grilling and tailgating on the highway. I was very impressed with that as well. So Patriot fans know how to do it too. Another text we got, we were just talking about teams moving from Division 1 to Division 2 and vice versa, 2 and 3 and 3 and 4. I had a text here saying, I think in general, if your school has a large enrollment, you should be in Division 1. Smaller schools in 2, 3, and 4, the division should go by enrollment. The exception should be the private schools. Coming from New Hampshire, I know they had a Catholic school, Bishop, and I hope if I say
Bishop
this right.
Bishop
Girton, yeah, that had an enrollment of 300 kids, but recruited kids from all over, and they could compete Division I. I agree with him. And I, so yeah. I think Rice, you made the perfect example that Rice is kind of a different animal because they have the ability to recruit. I think Burn Burton is like that as well. They have the ability to recruit. MSJ down in Rutland had the ability years ago when they wanted to do that. But I think when we're talking about power enrollments like we have in this state, we got some big union schools. Whether you're successful or not, I think you should be in the division that fits what you are as an academic school.
And the VPA doesn't have a rule like that for automatically sending private schools up. Essentially, like the way it works with these division alignments, like basketball, you get in most sports, Rice petitions up to be, because they would be generally a Division II school. They petition up to play in Division I in most sports. Football, it's organized by the league, so they don't really have that much of a say. St. J is big enough, they're always going to be Division I in almost everything, except I think like girls lacrosse and field hockey and ice hockey as well. Linden is solidly a D2 school. They've been Division I a few times. Burn Burton has grown over the years so that they're pretty solidly a Division I school. I think they're similarly sized to Colchester.
Yeah.
So like they're always probably going to be right in there.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. I want to say John from St. Albans also wanted to talk about fan bases, and I kind of lost his text here, but he had mentioned he had been to a Bills game as well, and he thought it was just an unbelievable experience. He's a Dolphins fan, and Aaron, you're kind of going back and forth with him, making him feel better about how much struggle he has with the Dolphins.
I apologized on behalf of the Dolphins to him for this season.
But stick with your team, man. I mean, hey, John, stick with your Dolphins, buddy. Like, times will change. You'll be a better football team. Maybe you'll get Tua, whatever
it is.
Just
stick with
him. Just stick with him. And I don't even know if he's the best quarterback. You know, is Tua the best quarterback? I mean, Jalen Hurts is getting it done in Oklahoma. That's what I mean about these quarterbacks. I mean, everybody coming out, there was laughing at Daniel Jones. He might be the best one coming out of this class, and a class that had some pretty good quarterbacks in it in the last 2 years. Who knows, you know? But
right.
Anyway, stick with your team, John. Don't say sorry for being a Dolphins fan. You are who you are. Own it. It's okay.
I said sorry that he has to watch them this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With all the picks they have, hopefully they can't miss on all of them. So
the hope
is that they have a chance to turn around in the next 2 years.
Throw them all against the wall, see what sticks.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, listen. He also just goes, worst part is having Arnie on my side. That might be the best. That might be the best text today. Yeah, listen, stick with Arnie. He's a good man. He knows his stuff. All right, let's preview the Bills and Pats, because I think tomorrow that's one of the most intriguing games on the docket. When we've talked about the NFL, and I have been very critical of, to me, it's very tight. It's the Patriots and everybody else. But I don't know what it is about this Bills team. They didn't look great last week against Cincinnati. I mean, it wasn't like you thought, wow, this team's unbelievable. But they found a way to win. But to me, if you're going to beat the New England Patriots, you got to get to Brady. And you got to have a quarterback that can make plays against the defense. And the Bills have both of those, Austin. I think that's what gives them a shot tomorrow afternoon.
And I'm anxious to see, as a Patriots fan, okay, we're going up against a much better team now.
Yeah.
What can our defense do against them? Because like if it's more of the same from what we've seen from the Patriots defense, this could be a truly special year.
Are you surprised about this defense? Because this was kind of a malign situation coming into the season.
I'm surprised they are this good. Yeah. I'm not surprised that they are good.
Right. Yeah,
because they were super last year. They really came into their own last year. I mean, what was the final score of the Super Bowl? Like, held the Rams, the vaunted That's Rams, true. To yeah, how many? How true. Few points?
13-3. Oh, I thought you were talking about the Bills defense. I was really confused when you brought
Patriots
the Super Bowl.
Defense. No,
That's very true. That's right. I forgot about that.
You think about that was where they were building from. And, you know, so, yeah, but to give up zero touchdowns as a defense in 3 weeks, like, that's, like, it's never happened in the Super Bowl era.
But let's look at the matchups, though. I mean, you know, I get it, but, you know,
Other teams have played bad teams before.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think this will be the first real test on the road.
Yeah.
Because when you look at, you thought Pittsburgh was going to be more of a challenge. They really are a struggling offense right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets, without Darno, I mean, are the Jets. And then, you know, you turn around and you played the Dolphins, which that's, you know, okay. I'm sorry about that, Todd. You know what I'm just saying. John from St. Albans, a big Miami fan. But when you look at this matchup, I mean, Buffalo gets after the quarterback. They can compete with those wide receivers. They have got good linebackers. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I can pick them to beat the New England Patriots, but I feel like they've got what it takes to beat the
spread? Do we know what the spread is for entertainment purposes only?
I have no idea. It should be pretty tight, though. To Jeff's point, looking at this defense, they've got Ed Oliver, Starlo Dolele. They've got Jerry Hughes. They've got Lorenzo Alexander.
Yep.
They've got a stacked defensive front. Like, they're going to be terrible. And Micah Hyde at safety, we forget, who's very talented. Good safety.
I mean, look, they've been building for a while now, right? The Buffalo Bills. I mean, they really have been. This organization's been trying to get the right players. They took a lot of smack for drafting Josh Allen. Remember, people didn't think he was going to be the bail player he is. But I'll tell you what, talk about a confident quarterback. He's a confident quarterback.
And he's tall.
And he's very tall and can move.
And he can, move.
I mean, you don't see guys that big that have that kind of athletic ability. He really is a difference maker.
So right now, I just looked it up. The spread is New England -7, which is surprisingly big for a game.
I feel like that's a trap.
At Buffalo. I mean, so like, if this was a game at New England, it would be -10.
Do we take those numbers realistic? I mean, I guess you have to, right?
You do,
I mean,
because it's scary how often it cuts close to one side or the other of whatever those consensus numbers are.
That's a big number for me.
I know.
In Buffalo,
me too. Yeah.
I can see 5.5, but 7.
But they could easily win by 9, too. Like,
very true. Very true.
Credit to the Bills management. The pieces they've gone out and got to put around Allen the last couple of years. They brought in John Brown. They brought in Cole Beasley. They brought in Andre Roberts, Frank Gore, T.J. Yeldon.
Yeah.
None of those guys were there before the last couple of years.
I mean, they got rid of McCoy. I mean, they made some pretty bold moves here to better this line, to better this organization, and better this these players. 655-6672 if you want to join our conversation talking Pats and Buffalo. Listen, I feel like there's a lot of what ifs. What if this happens? But when you're looking at the Patriots on that side, I mean, guys, and I know you're both big fans, but I mean, this team looks perfect right now. I mean, if it wasn't for some sloppiness from their backups against the Jets late, that would have been, those were three clinics in a row defensively. Offensively, they are, you know, I don't know what it, sincerity, you look at the Patriots and you look at their athletes, there's nobody on that team that wows you with their athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
You have a quarterback in Tom Brady that's 57 years old. Doesn't move very well.
Looks great for 57, but you get
my point. I mean, he's not mobile at all. You know, Bill Belichick is an absolute football savant. He is so far beyond everybody else that I really think he is the difference. He's the difference in New England. I mean, I've never seen a football team be this perfect all the time with athletes that are not elite. Usually you look at this, you know, LaRosse, and you think, okay, well, the X, Y, and Z are here, and this is why. He does it with whatever he has, whoever he has, in every single year.
Well, at the skill position, the question wasn't, are the athletes they have on the roster going to be good? It was, are they the ones that they have healthy going to be good? But so far, Josh Gordon has held up health-wise. Edelman's kind of a question mark. He's actually currently questionable in terms of, will he play this week?
But none of those guys are matchup nightmares for anybody,
Josh
though.
Gordon's a matchup nightmare, absolutely. He's a massive wide receiver who knows how to use his body. His problem's been suspensions in his career, and he's not had one this year.
Josh, I agree with you in terms of talent, but where he is in his career now, I wouldn't look at Josh Gordon and think, okay, how do you match, you know, his athleticism with somebody that's athletic? I just don't look at him as a difference maker on the field that you can't cover him, like you couldn't cover Randy Moss.
Well,
I don't look at it like that.
He's not Randy Moss, but like, he's not far from that either.
He's not, but in his best year of his career, which granted was a while ago, he had a season Randy Moss never matched. So he has the potential when he's healthy and when he's playing like a young man. He isn't a young man anymore, but he's still got a lot in the tank. And then the young man, speaking of younger receivers, you have Philip Dorsett.
He's been great.
Phenomenal so far.
Yeah, he looks great because of Bill Belichick and then what they do. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter who they are.
Yeah, well, but we're talking about, by great, I mean fast, cut ability,
sure,
after the catch, everything.
Yeah, and so the thing with Belichick is, like, they generally make the little X's and O's things that you need to do game to game. So, like, just game plan wise, they always seem like a half step ahead of everybody. But I think it's just like they approach it in such a calculated, intellectual level that it's, you know, it's not about emotion when you're keeping guys or letting them go. If they are past their prime or they are too expensive, see you later. And so, like, when everything comes from that, and it's such a structured, disciplined, organized setup, I'm just shocked no one else can be that organized and disciplined
because
and
I'm
smart.
I'm telling you, none of his guys leave and turn organizations around like he's done it. He knows more about the game. He knows more about the intricacies of the game. He knows more about strategy than anybody else does.
But it doesn't even strike me as that. Like, it always seems like we are more organized than everybody else. I don't know how people can't be that organized.
Well, it's because he takes all that knowledge and he turns off all the feelings. There are no feelings. It is what he knows is what he makes decisions based on always.
Boys, he has had a coaching tree underneath him that have moved on to big organizations that none of them, not only have they not been like elite like he's been, they're not even been good. I mean, name one of his coaches that has left that was successful like that, like championship level successful.
Yeah, no, there aren't. In the pro level, the best they've had is Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, and that's very average.
Yeah,
and that's very NFL normal, right? So what I'm saying is like you just said, like how can you not just take what he's doing in New England? You've watched it for all these years and go implement the exact same way. I know plenty of like Bill Parcells tree. Those guys went out and were successful. Bill Belichick's part of that. They go out and they're successful. His tree isn't successful. Bill Belichick. I mean, you watch the way they attack teams. They know. They just know. I mean, it's almost like he's made a deal with some, you know, with some other force someplace, some extraterrestrial force that said, look, we're going to take care of this for. He is the greatest coach of all time. He has the greatest football mind, and the Patriots are blessed to have him. And I don't care when Brady retires, as long as Belichick's the head coach, this team's going to be relevant and they're going to be championship level every year.
I think part of the reason it doesn't transfer is you can't teach sociopathy.
That isn't a learned trait. Yeah. They always just look like the best drilled, most sound team. And I don't get like that. That seemed like, I guess that's why he's him, because that seems like coaching and it doesn't seem like it's impossible.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, that's what I'm saying. When you look at what he's done, you look at how he does it with the players, he does it. Nothing he does looks crazy, right? They're not running schemes offensively that are, oh my God, I've never seen this before. Or defensive schemes that are like, wow, where's that coming from? They just do everything perfectly well.
I think the thing with just even with their offensive scheme, it's incredibly rudimentary, but it's perfect. It's entirely malleable. And I forget what the name of the offensive scheme is, but basically there are certain positions or certain things that happen on every play. And it's just, it depends on where you are in the play. It's not like you're drawing up these crazy, you know, X's and O's. It's the way everybody can react to the system.
Well, one of the things is the plays themselves are simple, but the playbook is incredibly deep, and that it can be credited to Tom Brady as the signal caller being able to handle such a deep playbook. Bill Belichick's been able to change the playbook constantly, but keep a lot of the plays. It's very deep, so the defense has a very hard time out of any given formation knowing which play is coming, because a lot of the plays have the same formations, a lot of the plays have the same pre-snap movement, and then all of a sudden it's not what you were expecting.
Yeah, I mean, look, whatever you want to tell me the answer is, the elixir is, whatever you guys think that the jumbo juice is for the New England Patriots, the fact that they've got a 40 plus quarterback back there, they've got, we can say what we want about Josh Norman, okay, difference maker, but they got a bunch of guys that are just great football players around him. No real superstars, no real superstar in the backfield. You got a rookie kid coming in, they get the job done. You got an offensive line that's pieced together, usually year in and year out. You got players on defense coming in.
They
going.
Don't get top picks.
They don't. I mean, they get rid of most of their picks. They bring in these afterthoughts, and then the New England Patriots. It's Bill Belichick, folks, and nobody knows what it is. Only he knows. He's got the elixir. He's got that juice. He knows exactly what's going on. You ever see what's the movie with I can think of it in a second, with the guy that played Happy Gilmore?
The
Water
Sandler.
Boy. Yeah. You know what? The Water Boy. You know, the coach that had that little yellow notebook that he had from the other coach. That's how he was successful. That's what Bill Belichick is. He's got that notebook, and someone else has got to get it, or no one's going to beat New England. But anyway, I think Buffalo's got a chance to at least compete with them this week. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, baseball playoffs start this week. Tell you what, man, my Yankees, I'm a little bit nervous. We'll be right back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
This is Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. Phone number to call, 802-655-6672, if you want to join our conversation today. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, same exact number, 802-655-6672. We've had the text line. It's been pretty hot today. It's been a lot of fun. We're just talking off air about this Patriot team, and, you know, and we're all, you know, I'm like the fan here, right? Like, you know, I'm just watching games on Sunday, and I just, every time I watch the Patriots, their wide receivers are wide open. They make every play on defense. They make every catch. Everything is, they're the closest thing to perfect. If it wasn't for maybe their backups last week having those turnovers again, I didn't see them, but I guess the turnover with the Jets and there was some sloppiness late with some of their backups. But this football team has been perfect. You know, we're all kind of come up with examples. And Aaron is a football. You're a football guy, man. I mean, you know your stuff. Listening to you, it's like kind of embarrassing talking to football with me because you know this stuff more than I do. But you know, they're the closest thing to perfect, and it's not like Bill Belichick, and I was just saying to you guys, he's not some motivator. Like, no. You just get up and you're like, man, I'll run through a wall for this guy. It's like, you know, you talk about like being, I can't imagine him being like a professor of mine when I was in college. I'd have been like, I mean, you know, you listen to him talk. It's like all monotone. You know, he's talking like this. That's, you know, we're on again. You know, whatever it is. I mean, but they're perfect. They really are.
He's a disciplinarian, and teams bought into it early in his head coaching career, which allowed him to prove it was successful, which then motivated players to buy into it going forward.
There have been a lot of great coaches that are disciplinarians.
I mean, perfect disciplinarian.
But what I'm saying is,
you get the star to buy in, and then it's hard to say, well, Tom Brady's okay with.
But listen to me. But pick any great team. I mean, that's been in the past years. Like Bill Parcells' teams in New York. Like, they had a couple really good years, but there were some average years. There were 500 years in there. You look at San Francisco 49ers with Walsh, you know, I mean, they had great years, and they had a couple years where they weren't great. Look at the Chicago Bears in 85, and anyone think that team was going to be the next year. I mean, we can go through
the Cowboys in the early 90s. They had 3 great years in 5.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's, to me, it's like, this is just unprecedented in football, especially in today's football, because I think back in the 80s and 90s, it was easier to have super teams just because the way everything was constructed, the way the game was played. I mean, now we're talking about in the NFL, we're talking about it's a year-to-year league. It's a week-to-week league.
Right.
I mean, you can be a terrible team 1 year and then be the best team in your conference the next year. The Patriots are the best team in football every single year.
And even in the dynastic era of NFL football, a 19-year run was unprecedented.
That's what I mean.
Say it like that.
But it just is. I mean, in your lifetime, like, I mean, you're, what are you, 21?
Yeah.
I mean, you're a 21-year-old kid. You don't even know what it's like. You're 20 years old. You don't even know what it's like, what he went through, or what I remember watching the Patriots in the mid-80s. I mean, when I kind of started watching football in the mid-80s, I mean, they were a joke. They were abysmal. They were like a laughingstock.
But I do know that the Steelers having a run of almost a decade in the 70s was completely insane.
Well, sure. I mean, that's a decade. We're talking about two decades. And there's no sign of this Patriot train slowing down. Anyway, we got to move on. I'm sick of talking about the Patriots, you jerks. Anyway. Baseball playoffs start this week. I got to say, you know, let's talk about the Yankees here. All right. So Yankees looking right now, record 103-57. If you told me going into the season, and I'll ask you, Austin, if someone said, hey, this team, pick a team, is going to be 103-57, you'd say what? Great season, right?
Yeah. Oh, clearly.
Right. Going to have the number one seed throughout.
Probably.
Well, they're not going to have that. Okay. Because Houston is 105-55, and the Dodgers right now are 104-56. So I guess the Yankees still have a chance to maybe catch the Dodgers for the second best record in baseball, but they're not going to have the first best record in baseball. And what made me think was, wow, think about the last 2 years for the New York Yankees. 100 wins last year, and they finished 6 or 7 games behind the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
They had to play the play-in game just to be able to play in the division series against Boston. This year, they win 103 games. They're probably going to get 2 more against a very bad Texas team. So, and I don't know how Aaron Boone's going to play this out, but you figure they get at least 1 or 2 more.
Right.
They've hit 300-something home runs, which is just barely ahead of Minnesota because Minnesota's right with them. And they're not going to be the number one seed. They're looking at having to play, if they get lucky enough to get through Minnesota in the first round, they're going to have to play at Houston for if it comes down to game 6 and 7, they're going to have to be in Houston.
When you look at the totality of what they've done the last 2 years, 203 wins and counting in the regular season, and not even a sniff of the number one seed.
They didn't go to the ALCS.
Right. Well, that could change this year.
Well, that's what I mean. In the year before, they were in the ALCS.
Solidly just the number two seed.
Crazy.
For, you know, 2 years in a row. Like, that's, whew.
It's crazy. And so you wonder, like, wow, this is just, you know, are they a little snake bit? You know, you look at them coming in.
That's just baseball, Susan.
That's exactly right. But going into this playoff, they're going to be playing against Minnesota, I think a team that's very capable in Minnesota. I think they have 300 or 302 home runs in the season right now. Their pitching is obviously has been a problem for them, but they are a young, talented group, a team that hits really, really hits bad pitching very well. And let's face it, the Yankees right now in that rotation, that is the question mark. Now, Luis Severino, who pitches tonight, okay, is another step. He pitched really well in his last start out. They'll probably pitch him for a couple innings. He isn't up. He will be great if he can be the Luis Severino we saw in the first half last year, which there is a possibility of that because he's had the whole year off basically to get better. Last night, James Paxton, who's been the Yankees' best pitcher in the second half, left with a glute strain last night, so he strained his butt cheek last night. Was a little sore. Ew. So after one inning, they pulled him. I think that's precautionary. That should be fine. But after that, you know, there's questions. You know, is Jay Happ going to be in it? Masahiro Tanaka. The bullpen has been dominant, but the bullpen at times has shown some fragility as well. So It's going to be interesting to see what the Yankees do in these playoffs. But as a Yankee fan, you know, you're kind of a little anxious here going into this because it's a team that I think expects to be in the World Series.
And we didn't get to talk about this last week when it happened, but losing Domingo Germán is a pretty big loss.
It's huge for them. And what a selfish move by Domingo Germán. If you don't know, you know, he raised his hand and I guess he struck his girlfriend. And, you know, he's on administrative leave. He's out for the rest of the season. And Germán had 17 or 18 wins. He was the Yankees' best pitcher all season. And what they were going to use him in, he was going to be like the middle guy. So, you know, if you had like a Masahiro Tanaka pitch 3 or 4 innings well, you take him out and let Germán come in. That's a huge loss for the Yankees, especially with a rotation that needs guys like that. Going to be interesting to see how they get it done. And there have been some slumps here late in the season. Luke Voit is in a terrible slump. Didi Gregorius is in a terrible slump right now. Edwin Encarnacion looks like he's going to be back from an injury. He looks like he'll be back for the playoffs, but he hasn't been in a game in like a month. Stanton is back. Giancarlo Stanton had a really nice game last night, but that he was in a terrible slump as well. And again, they were playing against a Texas team that gives up a lot of home runs and a lot of hits. So I think if you're a Yankee fan like me, there's some excitement on what they can be. But at the same time, there's some trepidation. And when you look at Houston and you look at that rotation that Houston boasts, you know, that's just an insane rotation. And they have an unbelievable lineup as well. So the American League is loaded.
So if you're in Aaron Boone's seat, how are you setting up, you know, the pitching staff for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would start Severino in game one, either him or Paxson. I mean, I think, you know, maybe I'm saying that maybe I'd start Paxson in game one. We've seen Severino in game ones not pitch very well. Maybe give him the opportunity to pitch in game two. You know, I think, and then maybe you go to Tanaka after that, and then you see where they fall. I mean, I don't know. I think Happ has shown some late in the season that he's been more competitive. The bullpen will be strong. And we know that if the Yankees can get a lead in the fifth inning, they're in really good shape. You know, we know the big names back there. But we also didn't talk about Dellin Betances was on his way back, and then he had an Achilles partial tear, so he's out now for this season, and he was coming back. So the Yankees have been snake bit all season with these injuries. I mean, when you talk about what this team has had to overcome, Aaron Judge was out majority of the first half. Giancarlo Stanton has been out the whole season. Luke Voit was out for a ton of time. Sanchez has been out for a ton of time. Severino, their number one pitcher, has been out the whole season until now. Aaron Hicks, their starting center fielder, has been out all season.
The one guy on that in that Yankees management group that's going to get canned is the personal trainer.
Well, you know, there's question. You laugh about that, but there's an article in the New York Post this morning about like what do the Yankees do going into the next season? You know, with all these injuries, because I mean, I kept going. Like I can keep going. Aaron Hicks has been out. Miguel Andujar, their starting third baseman, who should have won Rookie of the Year last year. That's a whole nother story. You know, he got injured early. He's been out the whole year. And Gio Urshela has helped us forget about that because this kid's been unbelievable. He's hitting over 321 home runs, 70-something RBIs. But Gio Urshela's been in a bit of a slump as well, even though last night he had a home run and a couple hits. So, you know, it's been the next man up mentality here. It's been a lot of fun to watch them do that stuff. But when you look at the injuries that they've had, that they've been able to overcome it, you know, you just wonder when does that stuff catch up to you? And you wonder, you know, we watched them in Tampa Bay this past week, and Tampa Bay had to win. You know, they were trying to win for their, you know, they wanted to get the wild card. But the Yankees scored one run in two games. The second game of the series, they had a two-game series, struck out 16 or 17 times in the game. It just wasn't pretty there, and I don't know how much of that has to do with the fact that Tampa was just locked in and knew they had to win these games, and the Yankees had locked up the AL East.
I guess
when you're watching this team and you're not sure how they're built, how they're trying to get themselves to the postseason, you just wonder, are they ready to go do this? Because you win 103, 104 games in the regular season, you expect to be in the World Series. That's what the mentality is. If they don't make the World Series, is this a huge disappointment if you're a Yankee fan? I guess that's the question.
I'm not a Yankee fan, but putting on a pretend Yankee fan hat.
Sure. It looks good
I'd
on
say,
you, by the way.
pinstripes are slimming.
It looks good.
I'd say, yeah, that would be really disappointing to win that many games in 2 years and not get to the World Series.
It would, but then when you look at, but wouldn't it be, could you say the same thing about Houston? I mean, Houston's got 105 wins. If they don't go to the World Series, and could you say the
same
thing
about Minnesota? One of those two teams.
Or Minnesota. Minnesota has 100 wins.
They didn't do it last year.
That's true. But, so, I mean, but you have three teams in the American League that have 100 wins. Three teams. 100 wins or more. That's crazy.
Helps when you play the Orioles a lot.
It sure does. But then you turn. But then you turn around, and look at the National League, and what do you got over there? You have the Dodgers and everybody else. I would say that Atlanta is a team that's kind of up and coming and exciting. But is there anybody in the National League that you think, oh boy, they have a real chance against the Dodgers? Because I watched the Yankees play the Dodgers, and the Yankees I thought were a lot better than the Dodgers. You know, when you saw these teams cross, during the season, you kind of noticed that wow, you know, the Dodgers are a good baseball team, but these American League teams are elite. I mean, you know, there's a big difference right now in the American League and the National League.
Were those Yankees-Dodgers games in L.A. or New York?
They were in L.A., which says more about the Yankees to me.
That
says more to me than anything else, because I've always said that this ridiculousness of AL teams having to travel to National League parks and go under those rules where pitchers have to hit is a huge, huge disadvantage for an American League team. That's not how they're built. They're not built to have their pitchers hit. That's just not the way it is. You know, and you're taking away big opportunities from the guys that are paid to hit home runs and hit from DHs. So that's a huge disadvantage. And for the Yankees to go to L.A. and be able to do that and to take 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4, whatever it was a big feather in the Yankees' cap, I thought.
Tangent here before we get out of this segment.
Yeah.
Isn't, like, interleague play, is that... isn't that a great thing? Like, wasn't that the most no-brainer thing? Or do you still wish... It was siloed off until you get to the World Series.
No, I love it. I think it's great. I think you see opportunities to have old matchups happen. You had an opportunity to see a Yastrzemski play in Fenway Park a couple weeks ago when San Francisco came. Yankee Mets games are always really exciting. I think Chicago Cubs and Chicago White Sox games, Angels Dodgers. I love that stuff. What I don't like is that whatever team goes into a particular park, you have to live by that rule. So for me, I always feel like if a National League team goes to an American League park, yeah, it may not be a David Ortiz-type DH, but you've got a professional hitter hitting in that lineup. When you go play an American League team, goes to a National League park, you've got a very unathletic pitcher trying to hit, you know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. There's an advantage to the National League when that happens. I don't like that rule of it, but I love interleague play.
I remember,
I think it's great.
I remember the first couple of years after they instituted it. It was like must-watch stuff. Like
of
regular
course.
Season, it was like, we've never seen this before.
Yeah,
this is really
exciting.
Cool.
Yeah.
And now it's just a fact of life. And it's like, oh, yeah, they played National League team this
year. Yeah.
Week.
And I do like it. I think it's exciting. And I think it brings another dynamic and little rivalries that you end up seeing. But in terms of the rules, and you know me with rules, I don't like changing rules.
Yeah, let's not go down.
But
that
I'll
road.
Change that. I would change that rule. That's one rule I wouldn't mind changing. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Our guy, Rams fan Ralph, just text us here on the Town Fair Tire text. He says, go Yankees, baby. I knew I loved you, Rams fan Ralph. I knew I loved you, man. I am right with you. Let's go, Yanks. All right, buddy. What do we got today?
All right. This is Hot or Not, which is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes. Stop by Superb in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. No box mix here. Make your day superb.
I thought there was some talk last week that cupcakes were going to be coming in today.
That's my fault, actually. It's been a really busy week for me. I didn't get a chance to connect,
just
with them.
Let the record show.
But I ran over there earlier this week to... I went over to see them earlier this week, and I'm just going to tell you, like, if you haven't been in to see those cupcakes, I'm just saying, like, just to look at them, they're just, and they make them all, literally, I go in their kitchen, they're making them hand scratch. I mean, these two people, Joe and Hannah, they just work their butts off every single day, and they are totally the most delicious cupcakes. You're looking for a treat today. It's getting to be fall time. Now you can kind of eat that stuff. You're trying to put a little bit, got to get that winter's
it's
coming.
It's not beach season
anymore.
Yeah,
it's not beach season anymore, baby. Go get yourself a cupcake at Superb Cupcakes. They're the best. They don't know much about sports over there. You know, they're big, like, Eagles fans, and, you know, I don't like that. But they make damn good cupcakes.
Okay.
They're going to smack me when they see me for me saying that. I'm just going to say that. Go ahead.
The Cowboys have to prove they are for real this week.
You know, that's a great question. I'm going to say not. I think we know they're for real, and I don't know if you're going against a New Orleans team that doesn't have Drew Brees is a stepping point there. But I will say that this will be, you know, they're on the road in a very difficult place to play. They did not look very good at times against Miami. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the first half, there were some. If Miami could make a play or two, they would have been down at halftime against the Miami Dolphins.
I did notice Josh Rosen was picking them apart in the red zone at one point, but his receivers kept dropping
the football. And, you know, and I'll say this. You know, I've never been. I've said this 100 times, but the best thing that the Giants could have done Week 1 is make Dak Prescott look great. Because if they pay him a lot of money and he's the franchise quarterback, I just don't know if Dak Prescott's that guy that gets him to the next level. But I think this year in this NFL, this is a good football team. They've got a hungry defense. But we'll see. But I don't think they need to tomorrow to prove that they're next level.
So if it's not tomorrow, when do they get that really big test? Because the Saints without Drew Brees are not really the Saints.
Well, no, they play the Patriots. I would say that's the game right
there. That's before That's the week of Thanksgiving.
Okay, so I would say, you
know, they play Green Bay after the Saints.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Where do they play Green Bay? At home?
They are at home, yep.
Yeah, okay, so Green Bay is going to be a test. I think Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback and has had a lot of success in Dallas. I think the next time they play the Eagles is another challenge for them. But I would say with where the NFL is today, where it's the Patriots to me and everybody else, I think that game with the Patriots will tell you who the Dallas Cowboys are.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
All right. The Bills will pull off the upset over New England this weekend.
Go ahead, you
no.
can go first.
No.
That's very, very simple. Yeah, no. Nah, I mean, I don't think so. I just think that they have the skill set to make New England be a little bit uncomfortable. And that's what you're looking for right now. I mean, I said it like a bunch of times today, that if there's perfect in the NFL right now, if there is something you can say is perfect on all facets, all parts of the game, I mean, it's the New England Patriots. I mean, they are perfect, but the Bills have the makeup from history sense that they can create some pass rush. They can get Brady uncomfortable in the pocket. You got a chance to create a turnover or two, but I don't know. I think it's still New England's to lose.
My mother came up with this one.
Oh, nice.
During our conversation about Division I football and changing divisions and stuff.
Okay.
You'll have to see what you think of it. I'm not sure what the rules are on this kind of stuff.
I love the fact that your mom's involved like this, though. I'm all in for this.
She loves the show. I think she's watching us on Twitch right now.
Oh,
so she's one of the viewers. Hey.
Hey, Mom. Division I schools should offer a full credit for varsity participation.
Yes, that gets way into the minutiae of one school versus another. I know when I was in high school, I loathed having to go to PE class when I had friends that would go to MSJ, and they didn't have to be varsity. If they were participating in a sport, they didn't, like, if it was two sports or more, you didn't have to do gym class. And I think that's totally fair because it's extracurricular. Yeah. And you could study more other things during your day. Rather than, you know, have to also do PE.
Yeah, I mean, let me say this. I think it's hot. I mean, I think what athletes have to do today, it's a commitment. I mean, the things that they miss out on, the opportunities that they miss doing with their friends or other crazy things that go on with their schools. I mean, these kids are committed every single day for at least 2 hours, usually every single
About
day,
6 days a week,
you know, for two to three months for one team, for one thing. If you're playing two or three teams, I mean, that's crazy. I think they absolutely should. And I think that there's more to life. Obviously, the book part of it is important. You got to learn that stuff. But there's aspects to life you learn playing on teams.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important facet that makes young men and women who they are as they get older. So absolutely, I would even say give them a couple credits. I have no problem with that at all.
I could think of some classes I would have not taken.
But it's not about taking classes.
Of PE. It would be,
fair enough.
Yeah, like it would be, like if the instances where I knew this happened, it substituted for PE, so you could just use the rest of your school day to do other things.
And whatever that works out, it is. But regardless of whether it's taking a place, I mean, I think they do deserve something for that. It's a commitment, and it's a hard commitment. I mean, there's a lot going on being part of a varsity team or any team, a JV team or a freshman team.
Whether it's, you know, that what would have been PE for you becomes a study hall.
There you go. Perfect.
I agree with you. I just hated our class. The NFL is approaching this PI thing wrong. They either need to use the rule right or not have it at all.
Oh, man, I'm all hot on that. I mean, if you watch football this week, there's great examples of where coaches are pulling the red flag out because they deem that it's pass interference. It's blatant pass interference. But because it's not ridiculous pass interference, they're saying, nope, it's still the play's going to stand. So if that's the way your mentality is going to be, then why do you have the ability to challenge the play? Like, what's the point of challenging the play? And then if you're going to come back, and we talked about this, Aaron, off the air, it's like, well, you know, if it's not real blatant, they're hoping the coaches won't pull the flag out anymore. Well, then what's the point of having the flag in the first place?
Yeah, I'm hot on it. Like, if it was pass interference enough to be pass interference, it should have been called in real time.
And if it wasn't called, it wasn't called. But if it was pass interference and you slow it down and you see it's pass interference, you throw the flag and you're saying, look, that's pass interference. And they say, well, no, it's not, because it wasn't crazy pass interference. So what's the point of the rule?
I think, sorry to cut you off, Aaron. If they're trying to avoid what happened to the Saints in the playoffs, make it so only the refs can go back and look at what they may have missed. Don't let the coaches legislate the game. If the refs confer and they're like, did we miss something? Let's go check. And they take 5 seconds. They go check.
Yeah, somebody, don't even let them slow it down. Somebody's up in the booth. It just hits a button.
Don't even let them slow it down. They just look like, yep, okay, we missed that, but we're calling it right now. Don't put the penalty flags in the coach's hands.
That's actually a phenomenal idea because I understand what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do, obviously, is keep the coaches from throwing the flag unless it's egregious. They're trying to motivate them not to by making them lose their timeouts.
Let me ask you a question,
stuff,
but if you saw those replays, wouldn't you say those were egregious? Yes, those are pass interference plays.
Not in the way that the play last year was, which I think is what they're going for. But to your point, it was infuriating to watch the Eagles basically survive that game because of pass interference calls that weren't called.
Yeah. It's not the game. It's bogus.
I would just say that if you're going to have referees, bad calls are part of it. And every time a bad call happens, we have to fix it immediately. It's got to be taken care of immediately. It's part of sports. Bad officiating's part of it. Just deal with it. None of this crap anymore. No more being able to change calls. It is what it is. Let's go.
I would not be surprised if Alshon Jeffrey has said some things on Twitter this weekend since that Thursday night game.
He might have.
Because he was getting lambasted by corners before the ball could get to him.
Yeah. That's not fun.
That's hot or not, folks.
Oh,
okay. It's an easy one today. We could have continued. You know, that's another rule that I didn't like. I'll just bring it out now. We got a couple minutes, right?
Yeah, can go
I
keep for going? It. Oh, yeah. Get it off your chest.
Can I let people know what I don't like? I don't like this ridiculousness of, and you're going to tell me that, and Aaron will correct me here, but as a fan, last week in the Giant game, we'll go down late in the game. Late in the first half, Winston had a ball. It was like instant at the 10-yard. He went to throw the ball. You'd see it was definitely a pass. The ball came out. Alec Ogletree picks up the ball, thinking, okay, it's incomplete. And they'd say, the officials don't blow the whistle. He starts running down the field. He gets about 60, 70 yards. His hamstring blows out. He falls down. Now he's out because there was some call that wasn't made in the Jets-Browns game that should have been a fumble. So they decided that we're going to call all these things fumbles, let it play out, then we'll look at it and we'll fix it whether it's right or wrong. I mean, now we got a linebacker that's out this week because he's running when he shouldn't have been running. I mean, again, We have groups of people that sit in rooms and try to fix every little problem that we have, and then they fix it like this, which is just so wrong to me. Like, it's a bad call, it's a bad call. Be better next time.
Look, when it's close, the rule is on all turnover plays to allow the return to play out and then review it, because you can't give them the return if you blow the whistle.
Right.
And so what has happened in many times in the past, which is why they do this, is they've scored a touchdown. You look back and it ends up being pretty clear in replay that it was a turnover, but you can't give them the return, and all of a sudden points are off the board that should have been there.
Fine, yeah. I get it, but these plays aren't even close. Like, that was not a fumble.
Yeah,
so, I agree. You know, it wasn't a fumble. So let's let the game be the game. If the official calls it a fumble, it is. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Let the official. If the officials can't do their job, then get new officials. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why do we have everything is stopped? The game gets slowed down. Momentum changes. Everything stops. We got to look at this and look at that. Slow it down to the perfect angle, because that's like, if the officials aren't good enough to get it right the first time, they shouldn't be officials.
God, I wish we could get better officials. I really do.
Well, then figure out a way to do it. There's ways to make people better at their job, and you'll have some that are good and some that are average. Get them better. But in the meantime, stopping these games and doing all this ridiculousness and changing rules like we are with the PI rule, right? It's like, well, it's not egregious enough. Yeah, it was definitely a pass interference, but it's not egregious. We're not going to call it. Because they can't, because we've opened up this Pandora's box now, because we don't think about anything. It's like, oh, we got to fix this right now. It was an atrocity what happened in New Orleans. Well, you know what was atrocity in New Orleans? The play calling.
Oh, yeah.
Missing the kick. That is what's an atrocity in New Orleans. Bad call happens. Things happen. That wasn't New Orleans' season. They still had the football then, right? They're the ones that lost that game, not that call.
They shouldn't have been throwing on that play.
Like, well, whatever it is, right? But that's the point. Let the game dictates itself. One call doesn't determine what happens.
And that was egregious, but the way they're trying to fix it is totally not the right way to go about it, I think.
Doesn't it make you feel like you're in the backyard playing with your friends? You're like, nah, come on, you can't call that. It was just a little pull.
Right.
You know what I mean? Oh, no, you can't call it. I mean, it's like, what are we doing here? This is the NFL.
Adding more replay is not the way to make football better.
Totally agree.
Like,
with
that
you.
Was just not the way 100%, to do it.
100% agree. And here's a guy in Alec Ogletree. If you're a Giant fan like me, you know he's their best linebacker, and now he's out because he's running down the field. He didn't have to. That's, and he's probably out for most of the season.
You'd hope they'd have made the right call in the moment, but having not made the call, they did the right thing. That's really. Brutal luck
for
you
guys. Of course.
It's supposed to be on close plays. If it wasn't a close play, then as a ref at the NFL level, you're held to a standard.
I agree. And what's happening now is they're not held, right? You just do whatever you want. They're going to look at the replay anyway, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we get a quick break. When we come back, we tie a bow on this show. Man, I'm sweating in here. We'll be right back.
It got hot.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
You know what's funny about you guys like me and guys like you two guys? Is that I am like so excited about the fact that after tomorrow night, the Giants could be 2-2. Like, and I'm thinking, oh my God, we're 500. After 4 weeks, we're going to be 500. Oh my God. And you guys are like, eh, I wonder if it'll be like within 10, 11 points, 15, you know, whatever, whatever, you know. I mean, it's like two different worlds colliding. I'm telling you, like, it's weird for me to think that you guys go into the NFL season with the mindset every week that you're going to, you know, every year you're going to be successful. Every week means something. I mean, you have no idea what it's like to wake up on like middle of November when it's 20 below zero outside and snow and gross and know that your football team's like, you know, six games under 500, not going anywhere.
Yeah, you can't spend your Sunday just escapist watching football knowing your team's going to be pretty good.
I find myself trying to find a movie. It's embarrassing.
I'm bracing for the moment whenever that comes that it's no longer like, oh, we're not the Patriots anymore.
But it's not on the horizon for you guys.
No, but it's not even close. Stuff happens. You know, I'm not so, you know, smug that I don't think it could never happen.
No, I mean, eventually it will happen.
Yeah.
But it's nowhere near happening.
No.
Let's just be honest here. The Patriots are in good shape. All right, so what do you think? Patriots, Bills, who do you got this week?
Patriots.
Yeah, I think it's going to be close. So what do you think? Like fourth quarter game?
I would take...
I mean, the number's what, seven? Do we say the number's
yeah,
seven?
Yeah. I'll take the Pats and the points. I think they'll win by more than the touchdown.
What do you got over there? I know what you got.
I think they win by 10.
Yeah. So you think it'd be a competitive game?
Yeah.
Give me the Bills and the points. I'll take 7 at home. Let's take it. Let's go.
I wouldn't be surprised if they lost, if it was within 3, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
Yeah.
I guess what I saw with the Bills last week with Cincinnati wasn't great. You know, they let Cincinnati hang around. They almost lost the football game. But you know they're going to get their. You know they're going to get the Bills will be paying attention this week. You might have been looking forward a little bit if you're Buffalo. You know, you win two games in MetLife Stadium back to back. The Jets were supposed to beat them. The Giants were supposed to be. You're 2-0. You go play Cincinnati, your team. You're supposed to roll over. That's how, if you're not ready mentally to get it done, maybe Cincinnati gives them a game. Maybe they're focused on the Patriots and they'll give them a better.
And since he's not a great team to look forward against because they've been playing like a dumpster fire, but that's their roster's not that dumpster fire.
So they got some studs.
They got some guys that can play. All right, let's go to the Green City Garage poll question today. Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, 802-651-9299. Tell my buddy Chris Wallace that Jeff and Austin sent you from 101.3 The Game. Because that's what Wallace likes. He likes to hear that stuff. And I like when people say that, so you know what I mean. Tell him. But anyway, our poll question today was, do the Bills have enough on either side of the ball to beat the New England Patriots, the vaunted New England Patriots, the greatest team on turf? What do you say? What did it come out to this week, Aaron?
67% of our listeners said no.
No way. No way, Jose. I didn't hear from any Bills fans today, man. I know those guys are fired up. I've got so many buddies that are Bills fans that are like, they're like me. I'm on cloud 9, but they're like on cloud 30.
If there was a team in the division that was going to do it, it would absolutely be the Bills. They've got the team. They actually look a competitor this year.
And who is the team? I guess who's the team out there in the AFC? Like, wouldn't it be fun, though? It would be fun in the AFC East if it was competitive at some point. Like, the team stepped up that we'd have a run there.
We'd welcome a challenge.
You tell me you're not smug, but look at you over there. I'm not totally smug.
I'm just playing for it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And man, I think it would be great for it to be the Bills. I think with how strong their fan base is, like we've talked about in this show, and how... well, the organization has managed themselves over the last few years, I think absolutely that would be the team I'd want to be the challenger.
And you appreciate the Bills because, first of all, they play in like the worst stadium in the league. I mean, it's in Buffalo. You know what I mean? And Buffalo's a fun city, but let's face it, you're not vacationing in Buffalo. You know what I'm saying? And they've been like just snake bit for how, I mean, even when they were successful, they were
0-4.
Exactly. Wide right and all that stuff. I mean, just, it's been brutal if you're a Bills fan, but this team is exciting. I don't know. There have been some Bills teams in the past think, oh, pretty good. There's something about this group, man. I feel like this team seems
to They can do stuff.
Yeah, I do. And even if it doesn't work out this weekend against New England, I think the Bills are a playoff team. I really do. I think it's a playoff team. All right, guys, this is Sports Saturday here. We're here every Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon. We'll be back next week. Have a great week. Get out there and root on your favorite high school sports teams this week and say hi to Austin Danforth.
Today, we have Winooski. Lechnath Littell is 4 goals away from 100
for the Spartans.
So that starts at 1:30. Looks like he'll get there.
Have a great weekend, everybody.